All right, we'll call the meeting of Agriculture, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs, Finance to order. And Representative Szymanski moves approval of the minutes, March 18, 2008. Any questions? Seeing none. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. Members, we have a number of bills to go through, and there are amendments to the bills, so we're going to get right away moving, hopefully out of here on time. Again, we're going through these bills. All of them will be, we can amend them and do what we want, and then we'll vote to lay them over or not for inclusion next week in the larger bill. First bill up is Representative Saylor, House File 4027. Chair will move House File 4027 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and you have a DE1 that you'd like to put on? Is that right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do. And I do have one small oral amendment to that as well. It was a drafting error.
All right. The chair moves the DE1 amendment, and what's your oral?
Okay, that will be, the oral amendment is on line 1.9, and the words, there's and that's crossed out, and then but. The word but should be crossed out, and after the word may, add not, so that the language will look just as it does up above in line 1.8. That's the drafting error, and
so
I apologize.
Line 1.19 will then read, accepted for collection may not, or and may not. Okay,
yes.
Everyone got that? Accepted for collection and may not is how that reads with the oral amendment. Any questions on the DE1 to get the bill in shape the author wants it? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment as amended is adopted. Representative Saylor, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As many of you may recall, we had this bill before you last year, and one of the things that we were going to do was to have the Waste Pesticide Task Force, which did indeed meet September through December, and they came up with recommendations. Which,
and Representative Saylor, we have a copy in the members' folder of the Waste Pesticide Task Force report that came back. Just FYI. Go
okay,
ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will not then read the report.
Thank you for that.
just briefly, I'll just mention that this, in Section 1, it is implementation, removing the existing MDA authority to charge a fee to persons who drop off the waste pesticide. Section 2, disposal site requirements, creating two collection regimes, one for ag waste pesticide, one for residential waste pesticide. And 3, an application fee removes the requirement that the MDA spend at least $400,000 each year on the waste pesticide collection and replaces it with language requiring the MDA to spend the amount required to collect the waste, ag, and residential pesticides. I do have testifiers with me, Mr. Chair, and perhaps you would like to hear from them at this point and then take questions.
So, Representative Saylor, just so the group is comfortable or familiar with your amendment now or in your bill, basically what you're asking is to kind of go back to the way things were before, annual collection of waste in each county.
Right. So that all counties are covered by waste collection.
And are we allowed to combine those collections, residential and agriculture, at one site if we want? What's it say on that?
Well, and it says that, you know, to ensure that this is carried out in all counties, the counties will be able to collect through the Household Hazardous Waste Program, but all the waste pesticides will be covered financially through the fees from the MDA.
Okay, so basically collect any chemical that shows up. Yes. All right, we got testifiers. Introduce yourself, whichever order you want, and proceed as you wish.
Okay, good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. Thanks for the opportunity to testify before you on the bill today. My name is John Steiner. I'm the Solid Waste Administrator for Polk County, which is in northwest Minnesota. I'm testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Solid Waste Administrators Association and as a member of that Waste Pesticide Task Force. The purpose of what I'll talk about anyway would just be to give hopefully a quick review of the MDA program, which has led up to the task force, at which point Commissioner Reinhardt will testify us to the task force process. Trying to be brief, the legislature created the waste pesticide program in the early 90s. It was what we consider a true price stewardship program. You were collecting monies through a tax on the sale of pesticides in the state of Minnesota to pay for waste pesticide related programs, including the waste pesticide collection and disposal program. That program was held every other year in each county. Every county had a collection, north half of the state 1 year, south half of the state the next year. In mid-90s, the Department of Ag approached the Household Hazardous Waste Program to provide for the collection of residential pesticides. Household hazardous waste facilities, if you're not aware, collect residential chemicals so that we keep those chemicals out of the waste stream and reduce the toxicity of garbage in Minnesota. That program was very successful, and as we moved through the 90s, it actually became too successful. We actually ended up bringing in more waste pesticides than the budgeted amount for the program would bear. I believe the statutory requirement was $600,000 annually for that program in 2001. I believe the expenditure approached $900,000. In 2002-2003, in response to that increasing cost of the program, Department of Ag went to regional collections. Instead of having one collection in every county, so we have 45, 44 collections per year, you went to about 15 or 16 collections a year. The other change that occurred was MDA capped the financial commitment to the hazardous waste programs for the residential portion coming in. Both cases resulted in the waste stream coming in declining. When we hit the budget crunch in 2002-03, basically what happened was the Department of Ag's appropriation went from $600,000 to $300,000. We went from having not enough money to cover the program to dropping the requirement for how much money should be allocated to the program. In response to that, Department of Ag offered counties and hazardous waste facilities contracts, hoping that they would collect agricultural and residential pesticides. The counties looked at the numbers, the allotment under a funding formula created by Department of Ag, and made the decision to either participate or not. Roughly one-third of the counties in Minnesota chose not to participate in that. And simply put, they looked at what their historic volume was, they looked at the money that was going to come in, and said it wasn't enough. Those 28 counties that did not sign contracts ended up with no collection service to their residents for approximately 4 years. March 2006, the Office of Legislative Auditor reviewed the Department of Ag Waste Pesticide Program and commented on the effectiveness of that program as it related to those non-participating counties, and found that the Department of Ag did not meet the statutory obligation for that program. In August 2006, Department of Ag held 10 collections for those 28 counties. Each collection was 2 hours in duration. And through those 20 hours of collection, they collected about 64,800 pounds of pesticides. And if you put the price tag on that, what it cost to actually implement that program in 10 of the 28 counties, it comes to just under half of the total allotment for the state that year. So moving to the 2000 session, this group was asked to consider a bill, which it did act on, to restore funding to that program. And one of the amendments added into it was the creation of a waste pesticide task force to review the program and make specific recommendations to this committee and to the Senate Ag Finance Committee on how to improve that program in the long term. And that brings us up to the end of my portion of the testimony.
All right. Welcome. Introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you. I'm Ramsey County Commissioner Victoria Reinhardt, and I served on the Waste Pesticide Task Force as a representative from the Association of Minnesota Counties. And as has been noted, the Waste Pesticide Task Force met four times and really went through a volume of materials trying to find out what had happened across the country, what the volumes were, what we could expect in the future, the cost to counties, because much of what happened when the costs were, or when the funding was cut from the Department of Ag, much of that ended up falling to county taxpayers and property taxes. The purpose of the task force, as you know, was to recommend long-term solutions for the Department of Agriculture's waste pesticide program. And we really did review programs and all the different possibilities, and there were several options that were looked at. And one of the reasons that we really went that in depth was because we wanted to correct or try to get back on the right track. We did recognize, everyone recognized, I think, that there was a lack of adequate funding. And also, the counties especially were really disappointed in the lack of communication and coordination between the Department of Ag and the counties. Often, even when there was a collection, there wasn't information that was provided. The collection was only a couple of hours. And if people weren't notified, it was very difficult to get the waste pesticides out of the waste stream and being cared for appropriately. And quite frankly, again, when you listen to the history that John provided, there was a real question about the commitment of Department of Ag to the program over the long term. During the final meeting of the task force, the group reviewed several recommendations and determined a preference for option G, which is also the county preferred option. It is detailed on page 8 of your report, and basically it's that MDA would collect the agricultural waste pesticides in every county every year and pay all of the costs. Household hazardous waste facilities would collect the residential waste pesticides through their routine procedures at their facilities. MDA, again, would pay the cost for supplies, transportation, and disposal. And finally, MPCA would pay the HHW, household hazardous waste facilities, for the overhead cost of the collection of the residential waste pesticides. We also noted that we needed to make sure that the pesticide disposal data would be recorded for household and agricultural for future use. Option G does indicate that, again, that the Department of Ag needs to be held responsible for the collection and disposal of all waste pesticides. Thank you.
All right. So, members, basically, with this, and I will tell you, we are waiting to try and understand the fiscal note in this. This is the fiscal committee, and that's why it's here, because basically what you see on page 3 is we're striking, we limited the amount in the pesticide regulatory account, and that's the account where people pay a fee to register their pesticide. That money in that account then is paid for disposal, and basically we're removing the cap on that. And so we're trying to understand now what the fiscal ramifications are. We do have some money in that account today. But depending on the fiscal note, that account may start drying up in the next year or two. And if that's the case, then we might have to make an adjustment to the amount collected in that account. Or we're not sure where we're going yet on the fiscal note, but we are working on it. We just don't have it here yet. I don't even see our fiscal analyst in the room. That said, basically what we're talking about is going back to where we collect ag waste once a year in every county. That's what we used to do. Most of you who live out there know your county recycling site or whoever would advertise, bring in your waste collection. The truck would be there. They put it together, probably line up 2-3 counties together out there so the truck goes down the road, collect it, and then MDA pays for disposal of it. We're also doing the same thing now. We'd like to continue with a larger and growing part of our waste stream is household hazardous waste. You know, the premix Roundup or the Trimex or the weed degons. Everyone's using these chemicals. I think ag chemical use is going down as far as waste, and the household is picking up. But certainly these are all interrelated chemicals that we need to take care of from a state standpoint on disposal, and someone's paying the registration fees to do just that. So again, we're just asking MDA again to coordinate all this in the most efficient way possible and move ahead with it. So any questions from members to these folks? Representative Hansen.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I was wondering if someone from the department could answer some fiscal questions.
All right. Who's here from the department? Here comes Mr. Bozicki. And then anyone in the audience that might want to weigh in on this, you're welcome to, too, here in a couple minutes. Welcome, Mr. Bozicki. I haven't seen you down here for a while. What you been doing? No, I don't have to do that. Representative Hansen, to the testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Bozicki. At the pesticide regulatory account is a dedicated fee, correct? And the pesticide regulatory account pays for the waste pesticide program and the other pesticide control program. I had asked in an earlier committee about indirect charges, state agency indirect charges, and do you know what the state indirect or the agency indirect charge is for the Department of Agriculture on the pesticide regulatory account?
Mr. Bozicki, why don't you introduce yourself as you start to?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Greg Bozicki. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, we do have those figures. I didn't bring them with me. I don't know what they are, but I'd be happy to get those for you.
Okay.
Representative Hansen?
Mr. Chair, just I've asked that question for the other agencies, and the Department of Natural Resources Agency Indirect was 13.99%, and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency was 24%. So I'll be interested to see what the Department of Agriculture indirect charge is. I think that's important, members, because there's money that people pay for registration or for licenses that goes into this dedicated account. With the new building, how much, Mr. Bozicki, how much money, what portion does the pesticide regulatory account pay for rent? Is it at the projection that the Department of Agriculture anticipated when the new building was built, or have there been additional costs where the pesticide regulatory account is being asked to pick up some of the rent?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, the legislature, when we moved into the building, had a provision that the Ag Fund, which the pesticide regulatory account is part of, the Ag Fund deals with a number of our dedicated accounts, had to pay an increased share of the rent. So that was put, I believe it was $500,000 for the Ag Fund, and the pesticide regulatory account pays, I believe, and again I'd have to check on this, but I'd say about $225,000 of that. That's in the ballpark. So we do have increased rent costs with the building. There is, I would note, also some additional general fund that is used, that was provided by the legislature for rent that's distributed throughout the division.
Representative Hansen?
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Bozicki, with the workforce in the pesticide area that are paid on the pesticide funds, which I used to be paid on as well, as they move through the workforce, and I would assume that the costs are increasing for the staff complement as well with the pesticide regulatory account as people move through their careers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, that's correct.
So, Mr. Chair, we have increased staff costs, we have increased costs with the building, and then we have some indirect charge that goes to pay for administration within the department, and the net effect is that's less, probably less money that goes available for the waste pesticide collection.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
So if Mr. Chair, if we redirect that the fees are to go for a service program, then the department will have to redeal with either the staff complement, agency indirect, or dealing with the rent a little bit differently.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, yes, I do have a statement at some point that I could read into the record, but that is basically what we're facing.
Probably, Mr. Bozicki and Representative Hansen, it would be helpful if you just give us the spreadsheet on the on your account over there where the costs go. If you can do that next couple days to our office, and as we prepare for next week with our omnibus bill, we can consider that.
Yes, sure, no problem.
As we try and discover what the fiscal note is, even though we don't have a fiscal analyst here. Are we talking about Reinholtz enough, Colby? All right, thank you. All right. Any other questions, members? Anyone else want to testify? Come on down. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bill Bond. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers. Our members are those that either produce, distribute, or apply pesticides and other crop inputs. And I served on the task force, and I want to commend Representative Taylor for addressing this issue, because it is a concern we all in society want to maintain safe use of pesticides and also appropriate disposal. In serving on a task force, it was clear to me that that the counties do have a problem, and it's been a problem for some time. I also am sensitive to county needs. I used to be county commissioner in Dodge County, and I certainly understand the idea of unfunded state mandates. And as I look at the question that was just addressed by the chairman, Mr. Chairman, one of the things the task force didn't really nail down very clearly is, where does the money come from? From my perspective, and that I think of some of the agricultural community, this feels like an unfunded mandate. That is, there's an additional $700,000 or $800,000, depending on how you calculate it, to be expended out of a fund that is essentially a user fee for those that either produce, distribute, or apply pesticides. As I said on the task force, it was clear to me that there is a significant source of revenue to meet the needs that are demanded by this system, and that is the Pollution Control Agency. I've never received, in my judgment, a satisfactory answer from the agency as to why, of all the money they have, and I mean millions of dollars apparently, and why that fund isn't more directed to the household hazardous waste disposal. As was indicated by this report, the ag waste pesticide, because of the way we apply pesticides, is actually being reduced in volume as compared with household hazardous waste, which by and large is volume is increasing because it's being diluted by water, and so the volumes are becoming increasingly high. Please understand that the ag community didn't walk into this task force requesting additional services. The services that the task force came up with are good. But I don't know that the ag community needs a collection in every county. Simply an announcement of when that collection happens will serve us just fine. So I think that's the yellow flag that we raise, although we certainly support the thrust of this. And the amendment that was added this morning that would suggest that end users will not be funding this, I just don't know how that matches how the financial system works. So the questions, Mr. Chairman, you raise are certainly the ones that we raise as well.
All right. Questions? Okay, thank you, Mr. Bond. Oh, wait a minute, don't go away. Representative Hanson.
Chairman, Mr. Bond, the pesticide regulatory account, the funds that are received in that account, are those only from agricultural pesticides, or are those from all agriculture, all pesticides, whether they're household or lawn care? What are they from?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanson, I think that would be better answered by the department. I am not an expert on that fund.
Well, Mr. Chair, the answer is they're paid by all pesticide users, not just the ag community.
And just to Representative Hanson and the committee again, I think it's at some point we have to review what those registration fees are based on the volume of product. Again, one of the problems we're having, and I was on the task force too, is all the premixes. A lot of this disposal we're doing is water now. I mean, you have all these premix. Everyone wants to buy the gallon and go out and spray without mixing it. So we're putting a little bit of chemical in a big gallon jug, but now when you dispose it, you have to dispose it just like you're disposing a gallon of any ag chemical, 2,4-D or anything else that's out there. And, you know, I don't know that that's reflective of the fee that these folks are paying, because frankly, it's a pretty good, I think, money maker for the household pesticide manufacturers. I honestly believe that, because they're selling water. It's like selling water in the supermarket, Representative Heigerkin, or if you sold water in your restaurant, that's a pretty good money maker, because it's, you know, kind of low overhead for water. So those are some of the things we're struggling with, and I don't know if we can do it today, but as we move forward in the coming week or year into the finance year next year, where we'll look at all this again, I think that's a discussion we have to have, is how we fund this. And maybe PCA does have a piece to pay with play with the household hazards. So I'm not arguing that at all. Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, this question to you, since you knew the answer to your own question last time.
to Representative Hansen. Representative Finstead.
Representative Hansen, do you know in this fund the breakdown between residential household users versus agriculture?
Mr. Chair and Representative Finstead, I know that in registration, in terms of numbers, but not volume, agricultural pesticides were used to be about 22 to 25% of registered products. There used to be nine, and again, I haven't been there for 3 years, so probably, and Mr. Bozicki could answer, maybe 10 to 11,000 products. So those are actual labels, you know, that go across all the way over from antimicrobials over to Roundup. And so you can count the number of registered, but the fees come in as a percentage of gross sales. Now, in terms of that information, that's protected. The department knows the gross numbers, but you should be able to get the percentage of agricultural gross sales household. You could probably get them by product, but as the chair alluded to, you go into a Kmart, and you're going to see probably a dozen different types of 2,4-D ready-to-use products. But the manufacturer pays a percentage of gross sale on each of those. And at this time of year, I believe by March 1st, they have to send in a check with a flat fee based, and then on top, the percentage of gross sale. So you can count them by number of products registered, and then you can count by gross sales. I think that's the type of data we can get to look at this.
The other thing, just to add on, that this bill does that we really don't have information on is who is coming into these county sites and what are they disposing. In the past, we haven't kept track of that. So when we ask, well, who's coming in? Is it ag? Is it household? We really don't know what's being dumped in the collection tank. And so this bill actually asks our counties now, and it's not a big expense for counties. They're there anyway. Most of them are recycling. Look at the bottle. This is TriMesh, and there was, 3 ounces of it, or if they can estimate. At least we'll know what's being collected and start understanding the difference between the products that are coming in, mainly by there's a registration number on all these products, and we can get a pretty accurate idea what's there. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, just the difficulty the department has is you can have a surprise bottle come in, a jug that the label's gone.
Right.
Maybe it's crop oil, maybe it's a surfactant, but you don't know. So it comes into the waste pesticide collection, and you have to treat it like, if you don't know, you have to treat it like waste. Just the same as treating it with water. And so what comes in is you do a collection, and so y'all come, you're going to get things. And if you did the analysis and the testing, it may be crop oil.
Yep. Anyone else want to testify? Yep. Come on up.
From the PCA. Also, Mr. Chair, I would just like to add as well that when these pesticides come into household hazardous waste collections, as Representative Hansen mentioned, many times, you know, the labels are gone, they're indistinguishable, and people that bring things in sometimes tend to misrepresent where they came from for various reasons of their own, and they're not usually grilled at the point of collection, but sometimes collecting that information can be challenging. But at any rate, I believe that Kathy Moger from the MPCA has some things she would like to say to you as well. Thank you.
All right. Introduce yourself for the tape, and hopefully briefly tell us what you want to tell us.
Very briefly, Mr. Chair. Thank you for having me down. I'm Kathy Moger. I'm the Division Director for the Prevention and Assistance Division, and my program runs the Household Hazardous Waste Collection System. You appropriate $600,000 per year to the agency to run the Household Hazardous Waste Program. We do not receive a specific appropriation for collecting waste pesticides, but we do allow the facilities that operate under our grants to collect them. It's about 3% of the waste stream that they bring in from residents in their areas, so it's a very minor portion of what they collect. I wanted to make the point that you can, of course, choose to appropriate more to the agency for collection of waste pesticides, but at this time you are not doing that. You are appropriating money for us to run the overall household hazardous waste system out of the environmental fund.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any questions? Appreciate that input. All right, members, I think we've heard all we need to hear on this. I'd ask that we do vote to lay this aside for now for possible inclusion, and we got some homework to do perhaps with fiscal notes and things before we talk about it again next week. So all those in favor, I'll renew my motion that House File 4027 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
That is laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
All right, Wealthy, you can try this again. You don't do a good job, and I know I got some sitting right here. I won't.
All right, Representative Junkie moves that House File 2987 be laid over. Do you want this laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes.
Be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Junkie may proceed.
And members, I do have a couple amendments I'll do in just a minute. Let me just briefly explain the bill. Most of you have seen it already in committees. We've been through three committees. This is the fourth. As you can see on the top, it's been through agriculture, commerce and labor, and government affairs, I think. This is a B20 bill. This is a bill that raises the percent of biodiesel in our diesel fuels to 20% by 2015. There's been numerous changes along the way to it. Again, we've been trying to work with all involved, whether it's the trucking association, whether it's the retailers, the gas stations, Flint Hills and the oil company interests, obviously the producers and others that have an interest in biodiesel. But briefly, again, I think mainly this committee is concerned about fiscal elements as well as perhaps a few minor policy things I'm going to put on. Just so you know, the appropriation at this point is through the Commissioner of Commerce, and you see that on page 4. So for this committee at this point, we don't have to worry about the appropriation. That'll come through Representative Hilty's Finance Committee, we hope. And the committee folks are working on that and the governor's office since they're coordinating payments on this. Again, basically, members, you see the outline of when we go to 5% next year by May 1st, 2012, 10%, May 1st, 2015, 20%. Page 2 basically lays out a whole number of conditions that have to be met before we go to these varying levels. And there's a lot of off-ramps that we call in here, too. There's supply off-ramps. If there's not a supply available, the mandate backs off. There's price off-ramp, if the price is too more expensive than regular diesel fuel, there's an off-ramp that can occur and it temporarily is laid aside. There's quality things that are described in here. Again, members, we've learned a lot from our B2. We were the first in the country to go there. I think it's only natural that we lead and be the first in the country to go to a B20 on this. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer specific questions. Perhaps we can move to the amendments and keep things rolling here. The first one I have is the A7 amendment. And I would move the A7 amendment.
All right, Representative Jeffy moves the A7 amendment.
And I have an oral amendment to my amendment that I'll incorporate on line 1.10 of the A7, delete and designated by them. So it'll read January 1st of that year for inclusion in the report.
Okay, Representative Junkie
And I will incorporate that
into
my amendment.
The amendment to delete on lines 1.10 the words "and designated by them." All right, Representative Junkie, we incorporated that so we can move on.
Okay.
If this is your amendment.
This is basically requiring a report to come back to us on what's going on and the implementation, and so that we have notice and we have an opportunity to discuss at each step too as we go on. So we'll be always updated. This was requested by the truckers, and I'm happy to put it on their behalf. It's a similar language that we saw go on, frankly, over on the Senate side. And so it'll match up fairly well with what they're doing over there, too. So that's it. It's fairly simple. Any questions to that? Otherwise, I'd ask you to.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. Are there any questions from the members? Seeing no questions, we'll proceed to vote on the amendments. All those in favor of the A7 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Amendment adopted.
Members, right. The next amendment is the A8, and I would move that.
All right, Representative Junkie moves the A8 amendment.
Members, this one's a little more touchy, and I'm going to explain it, and I hope you will agree with the way I decided to try and approach this. If you look on page 3, when we originally did B2, to get that done and get it passed, we had some exemptions we put in. Railroad locomotives, electric generating equipment at nuclear power plants, off-road taconite and mining, copper mining equipment and machinery. We have those exemptions in place. Now that we're moving to B5, 10, and 20, there's been others in asking for some exemptions, and for good reason. This amendment will address two of those that have come to me. The first one is off-road logging equipment and machinery. An argument was made by the loggers, mainly Northern Minnesota loggers, that while construction companies and others can either house their equipment indoors, or they're usually on a work site with electricity so they can plug in heaters, etc., in the wintertime, which we have to do, by the way, with regular diesel too, they are arguing that they are leaving their equipment in the woods overnight in an extremely cold environment, Northern Minnesota, and at times this equipment has maybe exhibited some problems, although, you know, we're still debating, and by the way, our Commerce Department works with these folks to understand if it's biodiesel or if it's the new low-sulfur diesel or if it's a filter problem or what it is, and sometimes it's a combination. But to alleviate that at this point, I will put this in the bill if the committee will go along with me and give them that exemption. Again, this isn't for their semis going down the road. It isn't for their diesel pickup trucks that go back and forth to the site. It's truly for the off-road equipment that may sit in the woods, the skidders and the other things. The second one I have there is approached by airports in the state, particularly our big airport, MSP, and Northwest Airlines in particular. And they've got some questions. Again, they have equipment, de-icers, baggage handling equipment, equipment that moves and pushes the planes in and out of the gates that may sit for long periods of time in the winter. And again, we're trying to discover what, if any, problems there are in their equipment. But for now, we will allow them just for that equipment on the landing field. Again, not up and down the road equipment, rubber-tired equipment that drives out the driveway or anything else, but that smaller equipment that's used in association with aircraft at this point to be exempted. Now, as I thought through this, the last thing you see is an expiration date. That expiration date is not just for these two that we're adding, but for everything in the bill. I would like, as we move to, and this corresponds to the E10, when that comes into play, I would like everyone to come back, and we should know more then. We should know cold flow properties better on this product. We should understand manufacturing processes that have changed over the next few years with this product. I want everyone to come back at that time and explain very slowly to all of us why we need these exemptions. Because I contend that these products will work and are improving and are good products, and certainly we know the truckers and trucking associations are already on board with a B5 tomorrow. So that they're okay, and we know our engines are warranted for that and everything else. We think a sunset would be good on this, even for the people we exempted previously, because I think these products are going to work. So I'd ask this be put on for now. I think it's a good compromise at this point, and it'll get our bill moving forward.
Thank you, Representative.
I know that was lengthy, but I thought it was important to explain that. And by the way, the reason I do it with B10 is because in cold weather, we click on and off the B10 and B20. It's off for the 5 coldest months, and it's back on for the 7 warmest months in the state. And so we've already kind of taken care of the cold flow B10 and B20. So that's why that sunset is set at that date.
Members, are there any questions? Any questions? Seeing no further questions, we'll proceed to vote on the 8th Amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair and members, at this time, I know there's people in the audience. I'd ask them if they want to come and testify for or against it to do that very quickly. So we have a couple other bills. But I think it's important to get some people on the record as we move this, hopefully, to the floor in our bill next week. I think it's important we hear who's for this, particularly so that as we debate it on the floor, members, we can confidently talk about the support we have for this bill. So, Mr. Chair, at this point, if you want to bring people down that want to very briefly testify.
Thank you, Representative Dempsey. Are there any members of the audience that wish to testify either for or against the bill?
And you farm guys, this is your chance to weigh in officially, so don't stand in the back of the room.
Welcome to the committee. You may proceed. Please state your name for the record.
Hi, members of the committee, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeremy Estenson. I work for the Minnesota Trucking Association as the Director of Government Affairs. And very briefly, I will just say that in the bill's current form, the Minnesota Trucking Association is going on record right now as being in support of the bill. Just briefly, how we got here, we, of course, the original mandate did not support the move to B2. And then in the winter of 05 to 06, some of our members felt justified in those concerns. However, last winter, despite even the below average temperatures, saw very few problems. Then when the governor made his B20 announcement, we got together with our board of directors and assembled essentially a white paper with 8 items that we felt needed to be met to provide us the comfort we needed to support moving forward. And Representative Junkie and the other stakeholders in this process have been very open, and in fact most of this bill is written so that the truckers and a few other folks will feel comfortable. So now with the adoption of the 8-7 amendment, we are officially in support of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Esselstyn. Representative Heidrichen.
Thank you, Jeremy. Just a question. I know in the past some of the truckers have had some problems with it's a cleaner, it kind of releases some of the dirt, and I know some of those filters, they were having a very difficult time at first. Have they kind of figured out how to best address this situation or not?
Mr. Esselstyn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heidrichen, yeah, for the most part, those issues have calmed down a little bit. Now, with each new EPA mandated engine, the micron level has changed for the filter, gotten smaller and smaller. However, with the 2010 adjustment, isn't going to see that. Meanwhile, the solvent property of the biodiesel should probably have run through just about every engine at that point, so we don't anticipate many problems.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Thank you. Any further questions? All right. I have another testifier, Mr. Schoenfeld. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You may proceed.
My name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I work for the Minnesota Soybean Growers and the Minnesota Biodiesel Council. And I'm also sitting here upon the request of Mr. Peterson to speak on behalf of the Minnesota Farmers Union in support of the bill, and the Minnesota Farm Bureau also in support of the bill. And, of course, we support the bill. I think one of the things that you should consider about this bill, when we got together as soybean growers and biodiesel folks and took a look at this from the very beginning, I'll be honest with you, there was some apprehension. And the apprehension really centered around the fact that right now soybean oil is at very high prices. As time has gone along, however, in the last week, soybean oil has dropped 10 cents a pound, from 68 cents down to 58 cents. Above 51 cents, it becomes problematic. But there is an off-ramp in the bill that deals with that. And there are also other kinds of things in the bill, such as algae-based biodiesel and other things that
should give some comfort as we move forward in the future. And the other thing is, quite frankly, who knows what in the world the price of crude oil is, or what the world or the price of biodiesel or anything else is going to be in 2015. And because of the mechanism within the bill, providing a 270-day advance notice, providing notification to the legislature and so forth, there's going to be opportunities to revisit this along the way. So I think that what I'm really saying to you is that I think that, quite frankly, this is a unique situation for the legislature in the fact that usually you react to things. You react to yesterday's news. This is an opportunity to take a very proactive position on an energy policy and probably a proactive position for agriculture. Because, quite frankly, in 2015, with the uprun of prices of fertilizer now over $160 an acre in some cases, and the uprun of costs of rents and purchase of land and those kinds of things, we may be very thankful to have additional places for our soybean oil to go at that time. I wanted to mention one other thing that was brought up in another committee, not today, but I think because this is the last stop, it's important to talk about this a little bit. And that was that there was somewhat of an inference about a food versus fuel debate that took place in some of the other committees. I yesterday sat down and took a look at the amount of oil stocks. There's about 2.9 billion pounds of soybean oil that are sitting in tanks, oil stocks, across the country right now. One of the things that, in looking at the comparisons going back to about 1997, the amount has stayed about the same, even though biodiesel has gained importance in the use of that oil. It's not exactly the same, but it's very close to the same. We're above some years of carryover stocks and below some years. I wanted to point something out. Most of you are aware of the debate over trans fats that has taken place. Every commercial you see now about food is to go to no trans fats in the food. Years ago, we went from saturated fats to trans fats, to trans fats. Now we're saying no trans fats, and people are going back to saturated fats. One of the reasons the oil stocks have stayed the same over the years is the fact that soybean oil has been losing market share in the food side of things in those cases in which food it is used for food. And the reason for that is because soybean oil has been used as a hydrogenated soybean oil for the most part, and it is a trans fat oil. Because of that, we are becoming more of a residual oil on that side. So those of you that are concerned about the food side of things, that's one point that you should keep in mind. That's why, even though biodiesel usage has increased, the amount of soybean oil carryover stocks is maintained about the same. The other thing that you might recognize about that is that we also have seen an increased use of animal fats, for instance, in the production of biodiesel. The amount of soybean oil has gone down and animal fats has come up. So there are a lot of variables, I guess, is what I'm trying to point out. I think it's fair to say we don't have to worry very much about running out of oil when it comes to the production of biodiesel. Secondly, biodiesel is a byproduct. Out of a 60-pound bushel of soybeans, 49 pounds goes for soybean meal. And the gentleman in the back, if you'd come down here while I'm talking, I'd just show you the difference, because maybe some of you haven't actually seen. Out of 60 pounds bushel of soybeans, 49 pounds goes to soybean meal. That is a food. It's 44% to 48% protein. It is the number one protein source for animal feed, and in many cases, humans. And this is the original soybeans. This is the soybean meal that you get out of it, 49 pounds of 60 pounds bushel. This is the oil byproduct. So oil is a byproduct, unlike ethanol, where starch is the mainstay of corn and it's the mainstay for fuel. It is also the mainstay for ethanol. But in the case of soybeans, it is a byproduct. This is the byproduct. This is the thing we're trying to get primarily through the use of soybean meal, and ultimately converted as a methyl ester into biodiesel. So I just wanted to bring that up because I think it's the last stop, maybe the last chance in a committee that people are going to have to consider that. And I think it may be an issue that comes forward as it goes on to the floor and so forth. The last thing, as I mentioned, is that price is an issue here. We have got several different plants in the state, all producing in different situations. We have got one plant that has its own, produces this. They make all of these products. Okay? We have another plant that only buys soybean oil and converts it into biodiesel. They all have different economics. And because of that, they have to adjust. We've had a plant recently that has pulled back on a temporary basis on production. We'll probably be online as soon as prices adjust a little bit, and they've dropped 10 cents in the last week, and so we expect them to be coming back online very soon, in sometime within the next, you know, 6 months to a year anyway. And in addition to that, we have another plant that produces all from animal fat. The one owned by Farmers Union, as a matter of fact, does a lot with animal fat. So there's a lot of different sources. So those of you that are concerned about supply and so forth, we do have an off-ramp in the bill for supply. But beyond that, we have a lot of different sources with which to provide biodiesel. And probably in the future, one that's going to be a big one is probably going to end up to be algae. So, you know, I don't think that's got to be a terribly large concern. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenfeld. Representative Peterson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Mr. Schoenfeld, informative as always, especially the trans fat piece that I was not aware of. Maybe the entire House of Representatives needs to know that sooner than later, because on the committee I had no idea. So I guess you had last week, or a different committee, and since then I've been contacted her by the National Biodiesel Board about the B2-9000 language on page 115 and 116, and the ASTM being the standard and what you need to deliver. But what is the market effect maybe of this B2-9000 and underneath that, in the second level, can you, renewable diesel, can you make that being B2-9000 certified?
Let me talk to the renewable diesel issue. There is a provision in the bill that talks about alternative types of things, and I'm sure they will be looking at renewable diesel in the future. Presently, to my knowledge, no renewable diesel has been made in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't. All of the things that we have off-ramps in this bill include things like quality control, ASTM specs. It includes BQ9000, a lot of different things to ensure quality. It also includes to ensure cold flow. We have a lot of questions about renewable diesel and are very concerned that it not become part of this bill. We think it may be something for the future, but it should be another discovery and another take a look at that at another time, because all of the same questions that apply to biodiesel need to be answered for renewable diesel as well, including production, where it's going to be made, you know, what kind of sources are going to be used to make it, and a lot of other things. The same questions that we've gone through. When we went through the B2, we went through 13 committees, and there were all these questions at that time. We would say that the same questions need to be thoroughly examined for that product. But beyond that, the BQ9000 is actually a kind of like ISO. Many of you are familiar with seeing signs that say ISO certified for manufacturing. What BQ9000 is a National Biodiesel Board certification program, a private program, not done by a state agency. And it's done with the idea of assuring that the plants that produce biodiesel follow a particular process and that they follow procedures that maintain the quality. There is concern by the National Biodiesel Board, however, about having it as mandated in the bill from the standpoint that they're concerned about their legal liability as it relates to, you know, if somebody is BQ9000 certified and produces a bad batch or something, then can they be sued because they were the ones that certified them, that kind of thing. They have a concern about that, and I think they did send a letter out to some people about that. All three plants within Minnesota are BQ9000 certified. That certification, I think, every 2 years is recertified so that they make sure that this is there, but that liability question is the one that they're concerned about. I hope I've answered your question at that point.
Yes, and just right. Quick follow-up. Representative Peterson, one quick follow-up. I do have another amendment plus a couple other questions.
Okay. For the record, and maybe for the audience, hearing the word renewable diesel, that sounds great. Can you, for the record, explain why that's not so great?
Mr. Schoenfeld?
Well, Mr. Chairman...
or maybe you think it's whatever.
Mr. Chairman, renewable diesel, as I said, is not a product that is yet really in our marketplace here. Give you a little background to it. What happened was that Tyson Foods joined with ConocoPhillips couple of years ago, and they basically, Conoco wanted to take Tyson Foods chicken fat from their plant, and they wanted to add it into their fuel. Now, there are two different processes, as I understand it, and I'm not an expert in this area, but as I have read about it, there are two different processes, a co-processing process and a standalone process by which it can be made. I can tell you this, that ConocoPhillips had planned to have that plant up and running some months ago, and they don't have it yet. So I assume some problems have been encountered along the way as well. But renewable diesel is not the same as biodiesel. Understand that, number one. Within the definition of biodiesel, it is defined in the law as a monoalkyl ester. That is the key phrase. Renewable diesel is not a monoalkyl ester. With renewable diesel, what they do is they put it through their processing, their hydrocracker, and it changes into and I'm getting way beyond me here, even though I did have biochemistry in college, but it's C16 to C18 carbon chains, as I understand it. And depending upon the configuration of those chains, it will have chains that will have different kinds of variabilities as to its properties. And that is true of diesel fuel, that is true of biodiesel to some degree, and so forth. So it is something that is being developed. It is something that maybe someday everybody will say is a wonderful thing, but we just feel at this point in time we would ask that the bill stays as a monoalkyl ester and that it be defined as biodiesel only, and that in the future, if something changes in these processes, just as biodiesel probably will change in the future, you can revisit it.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenfeld. And Representative Hamilton, do you have a question for Mr. Schoenfeld?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Mr. Schoenfeld, you did a very thorough job, excellent job, talking about the food versus fuel debate. Livestock producers, will that put to rest any concerns that they may have? Do you know of any livestock producers or groups that are in support of or at least neutral of the bill?
Well, Mr. Chairman, as you know, one of my other clients is also the Minnesota Pork Producers. And in discussions with them, they are very concerned about the high cost of feed and so forth that comes with this. But they, on biodiesel, are at least neutral. They are not in opposition to this. They are, it has kind of a two-edged sword. On the one hand, if you get a little better price for soybean oil, it will prompt soybean farmers to grow more bushels of soybeans and therefore less bushels of corn. Well, that's a two-edged sword. They need soybean meal to feed, as you well know, and they also need corn to feed. And so it is a much bigger marketplace. And you also recognize that there are exports, there are a lot of other uses for both of these commodities and so forth. All I can tell you at this point in time succinctly is that they're not in opposition to this bill, but they have monitored it and want to make sure that that there's nothing too out of line, and they're okay with it at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenfeld. Are there any further questions for Mr. Schoenfeld? Representative Hanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I did want to deal with the amendment as long as Mr. Schoenfeld's here, because we've talked about it. And so I'd like to move the 1442 amendment.
All right. Representative Hansen moves the 1442 amendment. And Representative Hansen, I let you speak on this, I just quickly want to introduce the students that are here in the room since they've joined us for this discussion. They're the ninth grade students from St. Louis Park High School. And I want to welcome you to the Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Committee. Hopefully you can take all this information back to you and tell your colleagues about biodiesel and how, if any of them are driving a car or pickup that operates on diesel, that they might be using biodiesel in the future. And you heard about the testimony right here where the bill is speed up for passage.
Chair, just the way you can tell if a car or truck is burning on biodiesel, it smells like McDonald's French fries when you're following it, all right? So you'll know.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you,
Mr. Amendment.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dunkey and Mr. Schoenfeld and members of the committee. The Amendment 1442, I'm going to support the biodiesel bill. I think that it's important to provide alternative uses. I think reducing reliance on exported oil or imported oil is very important. I think my constituents are supportive of renewable energy. But
I also do travel around the state, and one of my concerns is when I'm traveling around the state, I do see little rights-of-way signs along the road ditch that have furrows between them and the road. And when we mandate a use of a crop product, there's a temptation to crop the public right-of-way. And I would ask members as they go home for the Easter weekend to just take a look in the road ditches after the snow's gone. And I think you're going to see those little white triangles that say RW. And in some places, not all, but in some places, you're going to find cropping going on in the interior of those. And those are public right-of-ways. They're not private land. And I think that it's important to have public support for renewable energy that it occurs on the private land. And so that's the purpose of my amendment. I realize that, and I have not been on all the other committees that have heard this. I'm not on the Transportation Committee. This is my one stop before the floor. And I wanted to just introduce this topic. There may be other ways to deal with it. Maybe there are more enforcement. But I wanted to put this out there and get a response from Mr. Schoenfeld and Representative
Johnson. All right. This time I'm going to take questions from the members on the amendment. Representative Finstead, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, this maybe is an amendment that should be debated at some point, but this is comparing apples to oranges. It's relating two very different issues. We're involving the Department of Transportation. You know as well as I do that there's more transportation bills out there. You have more vehicles than Denny Hecker to attach this amendment to.
Wow.
You don't need to do it to this bill. I think this bill or this amendment makes a lot of assumptions. This is the wrong bill to amend this to. This is first of all, I guess the question for you would be, does the Commissioner of Transportation, do we have any laws on the books or any jurisdictions right now for them to deal with this? Are we just doing another layer of bureaucracy with this amendment?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Finstead, yes, there are laws on this, but frankly, they're not being enforced. And what happens is that letters go out again and again and again, but the cropping is still occurring. And on your question of jurisdiction, what we're doing is mandating a fuel for transportation use. You're mandating a percentage of use here in transportation. And again, as I said, this is my one stop. I'm at the Ag Committee, Ag Finance. This is a transportation issue. Maybe it's better on the floor. But I want to introduce this issue as a concern as we're dealing with mandating a transportation fuel.
All right, we have
a Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Finstead, quickly, we have few members that have questions.
All right, I would just close. I could go on forever, but I will ask for a roll call vote on this. And this isn't needed. We have the laws and the bureaucracy in place right now. I think we as legislators can walk across the street to the MnDOT building and tell them to enforce these things versus having to put an amendment on a biodiesel bill. So I'd ask for a roll call.
All right, Representative Finstead asks for a roll call. Representative Hamilton, do you have a question?
Well, I just had a comment after that statement about a law being on the books, and Representative Finstead has already addressed it. Now we'd have two laws on the books that aren't being enforced, and so I'd speak out against this as well. Let's enforce the laws that are already there, and thank you, Representative Finstead, for asking for a roll call.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Representative Heidgerken, do you have a question?
Thank you. Just a general comment to Representative Finstead. Some of you remember, I remember years ago when the interstate came through, we divided farm after farm after farm. The farms were good about allowing these roads come through their property, et cetera, et cetera. And at the same time, I know that the Department of Transportation is working with farmers as well, planting corn and et cetera, leaf corn close to the road, so that in the winter the snow doesn't hit the roads, et cetera, et cetera. So they've been working in a very cooperative manner, and I think the few cases that you may find where they are perhaps going a little bit over, I think it's more an exception to the rule than anything else. Thank you.
All right, Representative Junkie, this
Mr.
is two-year bill, so Representative Junkie.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and I appreciate the amendment. certainly it's an important thing. You know, if it goes on, I'd want to do an amendment to it to allow our lawn signs to be within the right of way. All of us in rural Minnesota know that that's a big deal out there. When you see the RW sign, you got to get your sign behind it, or, you know. Although I've kind of trained our MnDOT crews not to pull my signs out, but pull my opponent's signs out. But anyway, so I could see this as ripe for amendments as we move forward. And I appreciate Representative Hansen. I think it is, as we talk about buffers, ditch buffers, you know, the clean water stuff we're all dealing with out there, I think this becomes part of it. I know he sat on the ditch buffer folks, but I agree with everyone. Before everyone gets real excited, I'm going to ask, and I think he will concur, that he'll just withdraw this amendment for now.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted Mr. Schoenfeld to make, because I did talk with him about this.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Schoenfeld.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We did, Representative Hansen and I did discuss this. I agree this is not the appropriate vehicle with which to put this law. It seems to punish the biodiesel folks. For all I know, they'd be planting corner wheat in those right-of-ways rather than soybeans. But there is no justification or condonement by my association to farmers planting in the right-of-ways. It's plainly illegal to do so. And we do not condone it. And it should be enforced. And there is one other thing that I would think you would consider here as well, and we did discuss this as well, and that is that under the swamp buster and sod buster provisions of the Federal Farm Bill, if you go beyond the boundaries of your crop acres and plant something additional, even if it's a row or two, you break your federal agreement on the sod buster side of the Federal Farm Bill. Now, how specific that can be is that I recently added a little bit to a farm pond, 50 feet to a farm pond, and I got a letter back from my county association saying that my acreage had been reduced because they use a satellite, and they get it right to the foot. So if somebody is over there plowing into the ditch, not only they're in trouble with the state, they're in trouble with the feds as well. And so I think there are other ways to approach this. You know, I don't know if it's penalties or what it might be, but I do not think it's appropriate on this bill.
All right, thank you, Mr. Schoenfeld. Representative Hansen.
I withdraw the amendment.
Representative Hansen withdraws the amendment. We are back to the original motion on House File 2987, that it be laid over for possible inclusion.
As amended.
As amended in the omnibus bill. Are there any other individuals from the audience that wish to testify either for or against this bill? Seeing none, Representative Junkie, would you like to make some final remarks on your bill?
No, I will renew it. You'll see it again next week as we put to our omnibus bill members. And certainly, again, I want to thank everyone. I think most people are sponsors of this bill. It's truly a bipartisan bill and a government unit bill, as the governor, obviously, as everyone knows, is in strong support and has played a key leadership role in this also. He announced it last year at Farm Fest, and we picked it up and run with it. And together, I think this is a good deal for everyone in Minnesota and keeps us a leader.
All right. Representative Junkie renews his motion that House File 2987, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor state by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion passes. All right, members, we are moving on to House File 2942. Representative Junkie, would you...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't spend a lot of time. I think we'll spend more time on amendments, and I hope not a long time. This is the livestock investment grants. You've all heard it for numerous years. Basically, what it does is take the old dairy investment tax credit, puts it into the Department of Agriculture as a grant, and allows them to run this program. Basically, the bill describes what qualifies, who qualifies. Mr. Chair, the appropriation line is empty at this time, but I would... you will see something put in. We're trying to figure out our spreadsheets. I will just promise you this. I am going to try and put something in that line for next week when you see it. I don't know exactly what that number is, but it will be something. And so we have seed money to start this out. The original, fiscal note was about $10 million a year that we're estimating. Well, obviously, we won't come anywhere close to that, but I think it's important we put this language in now, and as we move to a full finance year, we'll have it in place, and then we can work on funding it more appropriately into the future. So with that, I'm going to stop, Mr. Chair, because I know that there's amendments, and we have a couple more bills to get through before we get to the House floor.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Representative Junkie, for that introduction. We'll move on to the First Amendment. Representative Faust, the A5 amendment, would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment is almost exactly in Representative Erdahl's bill, and so I think it would behoove us to just pull this amendment, and we'll discuss it as a part of his bill, and I would rather move, if possible, the A6 amendment.
All right. Since the... officially,
unless of course okay. The author of the bill would like
A5.
That.
Pardon.
No, and Mr. Chair, this deals with pasture, and I frankly have some questions with the A5 amendment yet, and I hope we can continue working on that until we put the bill together next week. Again, I will tell you flat out on pasture.
Right.
Or anything else, I don't think we should pay for seed or fertilizer or tillage or anything else, because the next thing we're going to do is pay for corn to feed the animals too. So fencing, feed bunks, water suppliers, drilling a well so you can water the animals out there, all of that I would say A-OK. That's, you know, more solid ground, but when we go with seed and fertilizer, I've got some questions on that. So I would appreciate, we can continue to talk, but you can offer it if you want on that now or on Erdahl's bill or see what happens next week. But at this point, I wouldn't be in favor of that. And I just thought we should lay that out. That's the point of discussion we're still having.
Representative Faust, we're still discussing the A6 amendment. Would you like to move the amendment?
I would like to move the A6 amendment.
All right. Representative Faust moves the A6 amendment. Are there any questions from members on this amendment?
If I could briefly discuss it.
Representative Faust.
What happened on this is when the original bill, when we discussed this a few weeks ago, the $40,000 is the minimum requirement on an investment. And there was some discussion that people thought that was too high. So I have, in my district, I have a dairy supply company, East Central Dairy Supply, that has done a lot of work in Wisconsin because of a similar program. And so I called and asked them what the smallest project they had done was, and they said $4,000. So that's where I came up with the $4,000. But in further discussions with other people, they felt that we needed something more. I mean, a farmer that makes a couple hundred thousand dollars a year from agriculture, $4,000, I mean, he can spend that much on tires in 1 year pretty easily. And so we felt that we needed to put something in there. So that's where we came along with the $4,000 or 10% of a person's net farm income, whichever is higher. And I actually, now that I'm looking at this, don't see that it says the or whichever is higher. Oh, there it is, whichever is greater than the very end. So that's where this came from. That's the justification for it. I'd be open to changing the 10% if somebody thinks that needs to be higher. But I guess that's open to discussion, so that's where we'll start anyway.
Thank you, Representative Faust. Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Faust, I'm just trying to understand this, and I don't even know how maybe to put words to this, which is probably not a surprise to a lot of you. But to me, it looks like two issues. We have the 4,000. I mean, the bill as a whole is trying to promote livestock development and livestock farming. So what you're saying with this is that we're going to have a dollar amount, but then we're also going to adversely treat people based on their income. So let's say I'm a crop farmer and I have 300 acres, and I want to expand my livestock operation. So then you're going to treat me this way. But if I have 1,000 acres and I want to expand livestock, you're going to treat me this way. So my question is, if the goal of the bill is to expand livestock, where does the 10% of the person's net income play in as far as that goal? I don't even know the answer. I'm really looking for direction.
Representative,
that's fine, and that's a good question. And the point is that it's a significant investment. And what's a significant investment to one person is not to somebody else. And so we want to make sure that they're actually making a significant investment, so they're just not going to walk away from it in a year or two. But if they're actually spending a significant part of their income on this in a year, they're much more likely to stick with it and make it work.
Representative Doty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is kind of in response to Representative Simpson's comments. I see this as a plus to not
eliminate some folks from this. Representative Heidgerken and myself have many, many small family farms that are determining whether or not they're going to stay in business doing the cattle, and if they are, they're probably going to be going organic with a smaller herd or something like that in many cases. So I think this is really going to expand the number of people that we can keep in business and really do exactly the wording that you said there to keep it for everybody.
Thank you. All right. Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chair. To that then, and again, just a true, you know, we don't see this often, but a true question. I don't have the answer for. I'm looking for direction. But how does that then adversely affect someone that maybe has a larger income? Because it's, you know, essentially putting more financial skin in the game. Anytime, there's a fine line with what we do here and how we're defining family farm or small farm or... When we start talking size and when we start penalizing those that maybe have, you know, me and my dad, 1,000 acres, well, you're probably going to say that's not a family farm, but I would, you know, die on the sword saying it's a family farm, but yet I'm going to be treated different in this bill. And that's my question. I really don't, maybe this is the best route, I don't know, and I'm just looking for someone to help me either way on this one.
Okay. Representative Otemba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, in Schedule F, many farmers have zero on their Schedule F for one, so there would be, what would be their 10% would be nothing. So I'm not really liking the 10% because of the fact that many of them are zero. And then Wisconsin has no minimum, and that seems to work really good. And then I talked to some of the people in my district, they gave me, there were I think three or four equipment companies, and they said that 4,000 was probably almost a max for the small companies in our rural areas, and they said the people that were doing a lot higher investments were all going out of our regions where we're living. And I can give you some examples. You know, some of the parlor pieces with the low lines, which they're now starting to do on the underside of the cow instead of the top cow, that's $840. Vertical washers, that's $2,000. The heat exchange, $1,670. Milking units, 410 for each cow, not cow, each unit. Receiver lines, some of them are jars, but now they're mostly doing stainless steel. That's about 5,000. Pulsators, $233. Fresh cow bucket, $261. So what I'm saying is maybe we should do not have a minimum, because those are the people that are kind of driving our economics in our areas, and we want them to do as much of that as we can in our small towns. And so I would I think 4,000 is okay, but I would prefer to have no minimum because of some of the three or four equipment people that I talked to.
Thank you, Representative Otremba. I'll just remind members that it is 11:30. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Welty. I want to just do an oral amendment to the amendment.
All right, Representative Heidgerken is offering an oral amendment to the amendment. Representative Heidgerken.
Okay, on line 1.2 and insert 4,000, that remains, and then take out from take out the remainder or 10% of the person's net income from farming operations reported on form Schedule F and filed with the Internal Revenue Service for the previous tax year, whichever is greater. Take that out. Just leave the 4,000. That's my amendment. So you're taking out line 1.3 and 1.4.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Heidgerken, just one quick clarification here for the record. Are you deleting on line 1.2 everything after
right.
the number 4,000?
Right.
Okay, and then you're deleting the remainder of the amendment? Or
nope.
still
nope.
all the way through 1.4?
Yeah, right.
So, okay. All right, so clarification here, just to get it on the record. Representative Heidrichen moves that on line 1.2, we delete everything after 4,000, and we delete lines 1.3 and 1.4.
Representative Walke, to that, Representative Heidrichen. Representative Brody and I have talked, and Representative Junkie, we did a tour. Representative Dale and Representative Erdo went along with me through my district. We have a lot of small dairies that have spent $20,000, $25,000 doing a retrofit, putting the small parlor in, where they milk four cows at a time. And it's really worked, and some of them have done it for $25,000. So it really helped some of these real little guys out that have 50 cows, but also helped some of the small organic farmers.
Thank you, Representative Heidrichen.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Junkie.
I think the Heidrichen Amendment makes this a good middle ground. You're basically replacing 40, putting in 4, and the Representative Finstead's comment, we're right. I mean, if he's right, too, why punish someone just because they're making too much money? We do want them to go and put in the livestock operation. So really, we have a top-end cap. So this, I think, brings most people in on the bottom end. We do, I think, need some minimum because, again, we talked about, you know, going to an auction and buying a $100 bin, you'd qualify for this without a minimum. And I think we do want to make it a minimum that you're investing in the operation to actually grow it, expand it long-term. And so I don't know what the right number should be, but I think it's a good middle ground now. It's a position to go into conference committee. Senator Scogin is carrying it over there. I don't know what they're doing with this, but they're monkeying with it, too, so we'll see what's going on.
Representative Faust, since this is amendment to your amendment, would you like to make a comment?
Yeah, this would be fine with me. I actually started with the 4,000 and then heard people saying that we need to have, make it a significant investment for people, so I added the 10% on. So if it's fine with the author of the bill to go with the 4,000, I'm more than happy to make that amendment.
Representative Ocampo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only reason that I would say that it would go lower is there are a lot of farmers in my area, including me, that do a lot of things by themselves. Like, I mean, when we moved to our farm, we did all the stanchions by ourselves. We didn't go out and buy any new stanchions or whatever. And so there's a lot of work pieces that aren't actually on paper anywhere, but then they go, you go out and buy the new stuff. And so there are a lot of people out there doing that, and I have a brother who's organic, and he pretty much did that. We're kind of conservative Polish people here. So,
we'll vote on the amendment to the amendment. Okay. All right. At this point, are there any questions from the members? Any further questions? If not, we're going to proceed to vote on the Heidrichen Amendment to the Faust Amendment. All those in favor of the amendment to the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. All right. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. Now we are moving on to the Faust Amendment. Are there any questions from the members? Any questions from the members? Any questions from the members? Seeing none, we're going to proceed to vote on the Faust Amendment, the H-2942A6 Amendment, as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. Amendment is adopted. All right, we'll move on now to the... Do we have any other... Representative Peterson? Representative Peterson offers the A7 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I move the A7 and starting out with the leading lines 1.2, 1.3, 1.4, deleting lines 1, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. And considering for the committee an author, lines 1, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So that would do page 1, line 18 after products, which reads on 1.17, the acquisition, construction, or improvement of buildings or facilities for the production of livestock or livestock products. I would add to this, or the development of pasture for use by livestock. And then going down, I guess, to number line 1.10 of the A7 amendment, on the second page of the bill, you'll see it starts listing you know, robotic equipment, scale, storage, bulk tanks, computer hardware, manure, swine calving, digesters, equipment. I would just have the committee consider fences as eligible.
Mr. Chair, I'm all right with that amendment.
Okay, yeah, at this point I'm going to have House Research clarify the amendment for us. Do you have that, Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the H2942A7 amendment now would just contain lines 1.5 through 1.10, sections that Representative Peterson just read.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Sullivan, for that clarification. And is there any discussion to the amendment?
Good.
Any discussion? All right. Seeing no further discussion, we'll proceed to vote on the A7 amendment. All those in favor of the A7 signify as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. Seeing no further amendments to the bill, members, are there any further questions on House File 2942? Any further questions? Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify either for or against this bill? Seeing none, we'll proceed to vote on House... all right. Mr. Stobosinski, please keep this short. It is 11:36.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Paul Stobosinski. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, testifying in support of the bill. We appreciate Representative Dunkey for all the work he's done on this bill. For looking at the issue of moving it through agriculture because of the issue of what's happened with the tax committee over the past couple of years. We also appreciate the reduction in the minimum amount. That does help to meet a number of our producers, and we also certainly appreciate the issue of fences. And we look forward to working with Representative Junkie on the issues of pasture development. You've seen the handout that I handed out in regards to pasture development. We think that's an important piece. It's about including all of agriculture, including those organic and sustainable, and we think pasture development is good for all farmers and good for all of agriculture because it's a way to help improve the environment. So with that, I'm going to keep my testimony short. If there's any questions, I'll answer.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions for Mr. Sobosinski? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Sobosinski. For the next testifier, would you please introduce yourself for the record?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Leander Wagner. I'm a public relations man for National Farmers Organization for the state of Minnesota. I speak to address the issue too, and I have to speak in favor of it. At least you are representing or taking into consideration all sides of agriculture, no matter what they want to make their improvement. And a lot of times you see smaller operations why they make gradual steps. They don't make big investments. But as myself, I started farming in 1960. And, you know, back at that time, we didn't have these kind of programs of any kind. And what we're going through right now in the economy of this country, it seems somewhere along the line, everybody's trying to throw a little bit more money into agriculture to feed this economy. And I just want to share with you, and I didn't think of this until a little bit ago, but I was the first in the state of Minnesota here to put dairy operations on liquid manure back in the 1960s. And even when I went to the soil conservation thinking that, hey, I had too much runoff from my yard, they said no, and I didn't get any help at all. And I always looked at making an investment, whether you're in business or not, if you have to make changes, if that change, the profitability of your operation does not justify that change, how can you think about doing it? And that's why, in my lifetime, I was always kind of against handouts. You know, if you're a businessman and you want to do something to your operation to make it better, you've got to justify the means of doing it yourself. I don't think anybody's going to throw you a handout. And I've looked at agriculture the same way all the time, but we haven't had the profit in agriculture, so it was either a government handout from the federal or here, somebody's at the state level wanting to find a handout. And all it is just money going through the system, but it's taxpayers' money. It's not money that's coming.